Good morning, everyone. It is 9:06, September 7th. I will call to order the City Council Budget Briefing Amendment Day for our meeting. And let us stand. Tomorrow is 9/11, and we will not be together on 9/11. So I thought we'd take a moment of silence in memory of those that have been lost, and then I will lead in Pledge of Allegiance. Moment of silence. Thank you. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, good morning, and do you need to read this in the record?
Your first item is a public hearing on the proposed 79.70 cents per $100 property tax rate for the 2012-2013 fiscal year financing. Are there any speakers in the audience that would like to speak on the item? Are there any speakers on the tax rate? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. And we will move to the budget amendments that the city manager...
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, please. I need a motion to close the hearing, please.
Okay. We'll get a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you very much.
Motion is carried. We will move to the budget amendments. Ms. Soom, do you want to opine or direct us before I get started? Anything?
Gene is going to keep track of your amendments so that you can see where you are. We'll get the total revenues available, and we'll keep track as you go so that we can see what we've got to move forward with.
All right, thank you. What I'm going to suggest is that we take the first three items, which are the bigger amendments, in order that's in your deck. And then council person that submitted it, I will let them give us some background and make a motion. And then we will take a vote on that, and then we'll do it that way. Starting with the first one, I think it's Mr. Allen. Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Mayor. And Mayor, my proposal recommendation, I think, even has a lot to do with your proposal for gross out. So, every year, the City of Dallas, we enlisted a group to do a survey a couple, 3 years ago, and just see how much money was involved in something called earned income tax credits. And come to find out, our citizens of Dallas leave over $80 million a year in the federal government in Washington, D.C., by not taking advantage of the earned income tax credit. This means that you have $80 million that could have came, went into their checking accounts, our citizens' checking accounts here in Dallas. But instead of doing that, it stayed in Washington, D.C. And the reason it did this is because our citizens do not know any better. They do not know any better. They do not know to take advantage of the earned income tax credit. No one's ever told them that it's the largest tax credit that the IRS provides. The largest tax credit that the IRS is the earned income tax. No one's told them that the earned income tax credit program is the second largest assistance program for low-income families in the country, right behind the food stamp program. The food stamp program has benefits of about 72 billion and the earned income tax credit is at $60 billion. No one's ever told our citizens here in Dallas that. No one's really ever told them, per se, that they have available to them free income tax preparation being offered by many of the nonprofits that are out there. No one's told them that if they took advantage of the earned income tax credit, that they wouldn't have to be going to these payday lenders and borrowing outrageous interest rates. They'd have the money instead to put into savings accounts, money to fix things, money to for better quality of life. But unfortunately, no one's ever told them. The one that's carried the water the most here in Dallas has been the United Way. United Way has done the best they can to go out and educate our citizens and provide free income tax credit preparation. And as a result of their efforts, they've been able to document that they've been able to bring back in to Dallas $14 million. $14 million. And so our hat's off to United Way for doing that. The on the other hand, in San Antonio, the city is partnered with the United Way in San Antonio for education and communication. And as a result, San Antonio, their citizens have brought back in $60 million in benefits. $60 million in benefits compared to our $14 million. This is real live money. Another way of looking at it, in San Antonio, they brought in $60 million. And of that $60 million, a lot of this money is going right back into the economy. And sales tax is being generated. That sales tax then on $60 million equates to $600,000. $600,000 is what went right back in. So the refunds would come in the first quarter, and by the second and third quarter, which is summertime, swimming pools, things like this, they have the money that they generated for additional quality of life issues. I think the return on investment that we're looking at by partnering with United Way is huge, and more important, it's quick. By partnering with United Way and the Bank on Dallas program, there's no reason we can't achieve the same results or better than what San Antonio has done. Give you an idea, too. Again, through the United Way's help, $14 million. City of Austin, they have 800,000 citizens, two-thirds the number we have. They brought in $30 million. Their attention, their focus has been there. If we have the same level of intensity that we did when we did the West Nile, just for 1 week, if we could get out and advertise, we can talk it up, start promoting it, there is absolutely no reason that we could bring into our citizens, into their checking accounts here in Dallas, Texas, $60 million. Again, this money will go in the first quarter, be spent, and that money, the taxes, then will be able to be used for this coming tax year. That's the key. We're making money. We're making a return on the investment that's quick, and that we can put right back into the budget itself. If we can just do one-third of this $60 million that San Antonio has already done, if we can just do one-third, that's $200,000 that will go straight back into this year's budget. If we can do two-thirds, which is $400,000 new tax money that would go in, that's a 300% APR that we're getting on the return on our money, 300%. To me, this makes sense. It makes sense to focus on it. It makes sense to get the money back into our citizens' pockets to make them aware of this. The return on investment is huge. We're using monies that will grow and benefit, and quite frankly, the program pays for itself, so it's not even like we should be even asking for this money. There's no reason to even add it to the budget because it is there to pay for itself. It will bring extra money back in to this coming budget, which will build the pools, which will keep the libraries open and such. As our former colleague, Mitch Ruzanski, used to say, you know, this is a no-brainer. Mr. Mayor, that's my proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. So that's a motion?
That's a motion.
Do we have a second? Okay. We have a second. Other discussion? Yes, Mr. Allen. Mr. Atkins.
You know, Jerry, thank you for bringing this to the committee, Mary, and I guess the comparison that Jerry was trying to show the citizens in the city of Dallas that the other cities, such as San Antonio and Houston, Austin, that have X amount of revenue coming into their tax credit advantage. If that money was coming back to the state of Dallas and the citizens here in a refund, they would spend that money and buy more goods, you know, goods or service, and that's what we're trying to put the money back into it. I guess the biggest deal that we were talking about in finance audit is more of education. How do we educate the people about earned income credit? And the problem with that, you have so many tax preparers out there who is not educating the people. Their job is to prepare the taxes and get a fee. If they prepare your taxes and you need your money right away, you might be paying anywhere from $100 to $400 fee based on what you get in return, and your money go to them first, and you have a checking account, they get it, and you don't have that money, and that money does not go back into them. I look at some of the calculations that we have, and I think that what we have right now is about $13-14 million to show that money come back to us versus like San Antonio and Austin, which might be $40 or $50 million to come back to us. And I guess the short term is that if the citizens have more money that come back to their pocket, they have more money to spend back in the coffers of the city, and we get benefit. And that's how you kind of drive the economic opportunity and your ratio there. If we lose that money going back to D.C., and the other cities is getting that money for their cities to put back into the population and to get revenue. And that's the deal. And I guess, Jerry, that when you said this, that if you look at the $200,000 that we are trying to talk about, if you go to the next budget cycle, and you can measure that, you know, in other words, you said this is where we're at today, and whenever I fill out that tax return next year, and you do the education piece, where are we at then? So it's not something that we can say we're going to do this, and you can't measure. And I like this approach because you can measure what we're trying to accomplish. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Cooper.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I do think the program is an important program. I don't know that the $200,000 is the dollar amount. Gene, can we put the $200,000 in the parking lot on the blackboard there with the name of it? Because this is, for those of you that are watching, maybe on TV, this is sort of how we do this thing, is we kind of put them, kind of organize them and see where some compromises can be made. But Jerry's talked to me about this before, and Tanel as well, and so I appreciate them bringing, especially Jerry, bringing this and putting this in the slot of Bank on Dallas. I think there's a lot that we can do, Jerry, through our libraries in helping get this word out and helping educating people. I think it's more of a larger program than just partnering. I mean, I think that United Way should take the lead on it, which they do, but I think that we can help in other ways, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I do think there's going to need to be some seed money for it, but I think that we can help in other ways. We have vast community facilities that may be helpful to them. So I noticed that you brought that to your committee last week, I guess, and I was unable to attend. Did you talk about an overall strategy for getting this out to the folks, to the taxpayers?
We talked, we also, the United Way, we had four representatives from the United Way to show up, because you're exactly right, it's how you partner with mm-hmm. United Way
right.
On this, because they have been the lead on this and will continue to be the lead on this. It is about communication, it's about focus, and those are the key components that they had talked about. You're exactly right when it comes to the locations and making as many locations available. Excellent ideal on the libraries. And why that's so important is that the monies that come in off of this can literally go back to the libraries themselves, back via the sales tax, things like this. So from the way it would come down on this, this would be somewhat of a short-term scenario. We would have an individual probably here. Well, we would have an individual at City Hall that would be focused on the earned income tax credit, be focused on working in conjunction with the United Way. A major focus would be on the educational component between now and December, and then from that point it would be back to the rounding up more volunteers to do the free tax preparation.
Our issue today is that we only have $329,000, but we're going to have some very good ideas thrown out here during this session that we're going to want to participate in. And a couple of things, Mayor. One, Madam Manager, isn't United Way that you ask everyone to donate to, and I know I do every year and click off the, isn't United Way that we're doing that for, or is it just?
It's combined charities. United Way sometimes manages the program for us.
Okay. One thing is, I think we can do a better job. I don't know if all the council members get those messages and stuff. I always try to give and check off the ones that I want to donate to. But one thing is, we can, you know, help with that promotion of this program within United Way. And two, to bring it back to committee so that we can thoroughly discuss it and set out a strategy by which we can get that word out to our citizens that those kinds of programs are available to them through tax preparation, and that kind of education is available to them. So I think there's a lot more to be said than today's discussion, but I think that your thought, Mr. Allen, is really a good one, and I think that you're right on track with the Bank on Dallas program expanding that to include this program as well. So
okay.
Thank you.
Let me hear from Ms. Hutchel. Ms. Hutchel has signed up, and then I'm going to comment on how we're going to do this. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Hutchel.
Thank you, Mayor. And Jerry, again, I think this is a very good program. I think that you're absolutely right. For us to only be getting $16 million back from this program, and San Antonio be getting back $60 million, is our challenge and our opportunity. My question would be, you know, is it a set 200? Because I would like to see this program move forward, and then make sure that we do a good job in the bilingual community. We did a great job partnering with Univision and Telemundo and the Hispanic newspapers to get word out on the mosquito, the West Nile virus. And I think that kind of campaign, you're right, would certainly get us to a level that we should be at, not at 60 million, but even double that by next year. So I think this is a great program. I'm just wondering if there's any wiggle room here on the amount.
This is first time out to have this level of attention to it. And there's always the wiggle room. Here at the city, it'll be dependent upon who takes the ball and run with it. The reason I say that, it's back to coordinating it with United Way and having access and having the enthusiasm to continue to get the message out about the benefit that comes with this. I wish there was a way that the reality is, this is free money. And when we shouldn't even be having the conversation. This should have already been taking place. our sales tax. We're talking $200,000, and basically we're going to get all this money back plus. And I've got sales tax today that we're over by $7.1 million in our projections for sales tax for this budget cycle. And I'm talking $200,000. So the point is that I even wrestle with why we're having this discussion. I wrestle with why we have $80 million that's known, that gets away from us. It gets away from our heart, and this is their money. It's our hard-working citizens' money, and we allow that to not have the proper attention and the proper focus. Blows my socks off. So is it in concrete? No. Could it be just 10,000, 15, 20? All it takes is one passionate person here at City Hall for just a short amount of time to work with United Way and get the message out. You know, these signs that we put out, we've all had the political signs. You can buy those things pretty cheap. You know, for $1,000, $2,000, you got somebody's got passion. Next thing you know, they're putting these signs out. You know, talking about free money, your money. Your money's free. It's the working people's money. So to answer your question, 200, whatever, the reality is you come back and you say, if you really want to do it and get excited about it, you say, all right, I'll tell you what we're going to do, because if we bring in on this earned income tax credit and it's verified that by these returns, because that's what we do, and we bring in $60 million, that's $600,000. All right, we'll carve out. Here's $200,000 for the libraries. Here's $200,000 for your pools. So who wants the other $200,000? Maybe we'll do a little public art.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, Jerry, thank you for your passion on this, and thanks for bringing this forward. When I reviewed this, I really was not prepared to support it. But you have gone a long way to convincing me, simply because it seems like an investment. It seems like an investment where you get a return. I have a few questions, and if you can't answer them, maybe there's someone here who can, or maybe these questions were asked at the committee level. I didn't see this in the briefing that you provided us, but do you have a comparison about the funding for these different VITA programs in San Antonio?
No, I do not.
And the reason I ask that is I'm trying to get my arms around whether $200,000 is going to make a real difference. You know, because if these programs are, you know, $2 million and we're throwing just a little bit of money at it, I'm not sure that that's going to have enough of an effect, particularly if that gets reduced to $50,000 or $25,000. Of course, it's going to reach some people, but I think you're going for the gold, and I'm not sure that this gets us there. I just don't know. I'd like us, if it's at all possible, to call United Way. I bet they have those numbers. I bet they know. Can we have a staff member just call them and find out what they generally think San Antonio spends on this?
I'll have my office do that.
Thank you. Also,
office, I assume you're listening.
That's magic right there. So if we could do that. Also, you know, Jerry, this is not just for this year. Whatever tax year, this will have benefits down the line, because the same folks will recognize last year I got money back. I need to do that again this year. So it can grow every year. And I'd also like to find out, as we're talking with United Way, how much does the $200,000 leverage from the nonprofit sector? Again, are we talking $1 million? Or are we talking $50,000? What is that investment? So that information would help me make my decision. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Jerry.
Okay. Thank you. Let me just talk about this idea first, and then let's talk about process. First of all, Jerry, once again, you're standing up for those without, and you should be commended for that. You know, we've got over 40% of our citizens that are asset poor in this city, and we discuss it, and we get passionate about a lot of things, okay? And then there are programs right in front of us that we can close that gap when we see something like this. So I think this is a real thing. I do think God's in the details on this stuff, and to me it's the nature of the program, how United Way measures it, and how we make this thing an ongoing situation. To me, because I don't think we're going to jump from, you know, year 14 to 60 overnight. The question is, how do you build on this thing and make it an ongoing revenue stream to the citizens of the Dallas? When I heard about it, I thought it was a good idea, and I want to support it. I think Ms. Hunt's questions are good in the sense that how are we going to spend the money, because, and how are we going to measure it? Not because it's not a good thing. It's more, how do we set this thing up if we need to spend $500,000 next year? How do we prove it out? You know, to kind of test it this year to prove it out for next year. Because if what you say is true, that we can just drive that up and a sales tax comes right back, we should be able to understand that. But, you know, getting out over our skis completely could be problematic. So I'm going to, here's what I'm going to ask you to consider. Pulling your amendment off at this point, putting it on that board, okay? And when there seems to be some passion around this idea, and I think people want to come back to it when we have these questions answered, and maybe after they see some of the other things that we're talking about. Because, I mean, you can do whatever you want, but I think you might get some disfunded if you do that.
excuse me, Mayor, that sounds fair. I will do that. And one last little comment on this. The ripple effect is huge, because you're working again with the nonprofits. These poor people, when they go to the tax return, they're going to the payday lenders, they're doing rapid refunds that are taking their money that's due them. So United Way continues to work with them on asset building and such. So yeah, I will follow your lead on this and then continue to seek your guidance. And,
okay,
because this is an important part, I think, of growth.
Well, we'll come back to it, but we'll what's the correct term? We'll defer your amendment. That's the verb.
I have a question. Now, Jim Reed was working on this a while back. Is this the same thing that Jim Reed was working on? Yeah, he's still working on it. I think so.
Mr. Reed's always been passionate about the earned income tax credit.
Uh-huh.
And he's been passionate and has given guidance and direction.
Okay.
And that now too has been moved that over towards the United Way.
Okay, so Jim is no longer working on it?
Particularly our Bank on Dallas program.
Mm-hmm.
Jim did a tremendous job of getting it up. We opened over 25,000 new accounts, and then 2 months ago, I still lead the United Bank on Dallas, but the United Way has taken over the Bank on Dallas account, Bank on Dallas program, which we're very, very, very.
Yeah,
very,
because I remember Jim had came and briefed some of us last year about this. I think it was Jim who really started the way on this tax preparation,
right?
And money was going. So I want to recognize that Jim was the first person who really took charge in making sure that this happened. And I think he took it to the United Way, and United kind of took it and went from there. But we got to give Jim Reed his kudos on making sure it happened. Thank you so much.
Just in looking at Google about this, that the Department of Treasury has this program where they give you a bank card and also open up a checking account with your taxes that come back. If you earned, they did just an analysis in Tulsa, if you earned about $12,000 a year through this program, they saved $583 in taxes, or 47% of their overall, would have been their overall tax return. But there's more connected with it than just the tax return. There's a education program. I know you've been doing the Bank on Dallas, but there's a whole education program of now becoming someone who does not use payday lending, but they use the banks and that kind of thing. So, I mean, there's more to the program, and I think it's worthwhile us exploring it into that depth. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Ms. Coop. All right, well, let's move to the next amendment, and that is Mr. Cadain. Mr. Cadain?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you for allowing me to bring this to the council. This is an amendment to try to get more hours to our branch libraries all over. We're steadily have been trying to work with the libraries to bring them back to where they used to be. Everybody in this city, I guess every walk of life, uses the libraries. And main concern is our kids, our schools. That's some way that we've been trying to work with the school system to help them, to help our children. This is a great way that we can do it, and through their programs. They need the hours, they need the time to do these programs. And mainly, I guess it's in the evening. But this is just a small part. This isn't all the hours they need. This just gives them a few hours each day, and I believe it's Tuesday through Thursday. Is that right, Ms. Chipperfield, that we're adding these hours?
So it would give an additional hour for each of the branch libraries?
Isn't that right? Yeah.
Be clear. I'm sorry. Be clear. What is this by?
So it extends the 6 p.m. closing time to 7 p.m. for each library for one day a week, except for the two DISD co-locations.
Yeah. And tell me, and we don't even, what do we do on Mondays?
So the branches are closed on Mondays, with the exception of the two DISD branches.
So I just feel like this is a small part to get our libraries back to where they need to be, Mayor. We need to push for that. I bet everybody uses the library. You have your workforce uses it. You've got, I know attorneys use it. I know every aspect of life out there uses it. You've got people that have no other way to do what they need to do but to go through the libraries. Mm-hmm. They use the computers, they use the papers, everything. So I think this is very important for our city, and the main thing about it is it everybody utilizes our libraries. So it's a deal I'd like to move forward, Mayor, and I don't know if I need to make a motion to do that.
Yes.
Well, I'd like to make a motion to move that forward to get those few hours back that we definitely need.
The 320. Do we have a second? We have Ms. Grayson's second. Discussion? Yes, Grayson? Yeah. Well, go ahead, Michelle. What were you saying? What do you want to do?
Councilmember Cadain, I wonder if we could put it aside for just a minute and take a look at some of the other ideas before we vote on whether or not we want to do this.
Well, that may be a way to do it. Put them all on the board, and then let's see which ones we want out of what we got on the board. Important to me that this is a very important item for our city and our education, and I don't mind doing that, Mayor. If maybe we do them all that way, put them on the board, and then let's take a look, and then we'll vote for them. That's fine with me.
Ms. Hunt, wanted to say something.
Thank you. Thanks, Mayor. Could I get a clarification one more time about what this will do?
All right. So each branch closes at 6 p.m. on Wednesdays, and at 8 p.m. the other two Tuesdays and Thursdays. So would it extend that one night from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. So an additional hour one day a week.
So we will defer your amendment. Okay. Okay. Any other questions or comments? All right. We have our next. Well, how are we going to do this? Let's just go ahead and not make an amendment here. this is kind of the a big omnibus, and I think Miss Alonzo, you were pushing some of these things. You want to talk? You want to talk that, or Miss Medrano?
We can go.
Yeah.
Just to pick categories up there with the number.
Ms. Coop, why don't you take lead here? You just seem to know what you're doing.
Okay. There's six categories of things up there. There's libraries, park and rec, cultural affairs, summer musicals, African American Museum, and the tax.
On this amendment?
On all of them. All of them across, okay? Because what's going to happen, Mayor, is we're going to end up with the same discussion on every one of them. Because they're all great. They're all terrific programs. You know? They are. So I sort of like making sausage here.
All right, so Ms. Alonzo, speak to the pools, and let's put the pools up here.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And before I do that, Mr. Mayor, can I get clarification on process?
Well, that's, yes, if there was, you could get it.
Because, I mean,
Here's what we're going to do. I want everybody to speak to their item. We'll put it up there, okay?
And then we'll go
we'll discuss it in general. Then we'll try to get some motions to coalesce.
Absolutely.
Okay?
So, right. So I want to ask, before I talk about it, this item per se, do I make it in the form of a motion first? Not at this point.
Right.
Okay, sir.
Right.
I want to make sure that I get clarification because I want to make sure. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. I, along with several of the colleagues that are on the list, we want to make sure that we have good and better quality of life for our children, for our constituents. I, on a personal note, in one of the areas of the pools, not only do we not have that pool access, but there was a lot of misunderstandings. I think that it's very important that we have what we, one thing that we've been talking about is utilizing what we have. And one of the things that is available are the pools. It's unfortunate that some of them were not, I speak today, that they're not available all the time as the others are. And accessibility. But it's keeping the kids busy. And in this area particularly, and I know that several of my colleagues have the same issue, is we're talking about the having a location, having access, having the kids in have a good quality of life through, for example, swimming. And that is, they've participated in swim meets. They've won, but they had to go back and forth, and it was a bit confusing. But why? I think it has to do with information, communication, and more than anything, invitation. That's something that we've been talking about. Why am I so passionate myself in this? Is because in the area that I'm speaking of, and I know that several of my colleagues have the same thing, is that not only do we not have access or more access to the pools, is we don't have, the rec center's not open. There are, I mean, where else can they go? What else can they do? That they had to not only jump the fence at one point because it's a beautiful swimming pool, but they couldn't have access to it because we didn't have the time. So, colleagues, I ask for your support for this. It's not only for the area that I'm talking about, for several. So for our children, for our kids, and for a better quality of life for our constituents, I ask for that. Also, we have on this amendment is the Office of Cultural Affairs operating and project support for the arts and cultural, and that is for 220 for the pools as well, and that is to open the pools that are mentioned for 5 days, and that would be the same time as the other pools, as well as the Office of Cultural Affairs, $100,000 for cultural programming. And that I can ask for our chairwoman, Ms. Margolin, to add to that information. Thank you, Ms. Margolin.
Can I
speak to that, Mayor?
Yes, you can. I just want to clarify what you just said on the pool openings. It's what? It buys you what?
Yes.
It buys you what? The $220,000 buys you 2 days.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I apologize. It's in this amendment, the $220,000 for the pools. It opens five pools, as mentioned. And if you want to, I can share it again. It's Samuel Grand, H.R. Moore, Bonnie View, Glendale, and Next Line pools from the 2 days to 5 days. That's what it is.
Those pools are only open two days a week.
That is correct. Right. 2 days a week, okay. And we want to open them 5 days a week.
Thank you, Ms. Morgan.
Thank you, Mayor. Since fiscal year 2007 and 8, we have cut our funding to arts organizations by 40%. In 2007-8, our funding was right at about $5 million. In the proposed budget this year, it's right at about just under $3 million. And so this would restore $100,000 in funding. It's not a lot, but it continues to move us in the right direction. The funding for this year is flat from the proposed budget's flat from the current budget, and I would like to see us show good faith to the arts organizations by bringing that up by $100,000.
Thank you, Ms. Margolin. I will entertain, if that's what that is,
May
the
I?
Next page. Yes,
Davis. Did Pauline let you know I want to speak?
Mm-hmm. Please.
Thank you, sir.
Speak, Ms. Davis.
Yes, on this particular item here, I will not be supporting the Office of Cultural Affairs for $100,000, but we do have one coming up for $50,000, and I will be supporting that. We have an amendment coming up for that.
Well, right now, I was just going to call on you.
Okay. But one of the things I wanted to ask Paul, can you come back up, please? The 2 days per week includes what 2 days at these facilities?
It varies across the city, so we can keep different schools open on different. So one might be open from Monday through Friday, the next Tuesday through Saturday, and so on. So we keep them citywide. Those five schools are scattered around.
So these schools here that's open 2 days per week, one of them is Exline that's in my district.
That's correct.
And those what are those 2 days?
Yes, ma'am.
You don't have those 2 days?
I don't know those 2 days. No, they're all different. Where the community wants.
This is why I'm going to be supporting this amendment, because some of the pools in other areas are open 5 days a week.
That's correct.
Then you got some in other areas are only open 2 days a week, which I think is totally unfair. If they're going to be 5 days at some pools, then they need to be 5 days at all the pools. And I know this is a matter of us trying to balance our budget at the time that this was done. I do realize that. So I will be supporting this to ensure that all kids get a chance to swim 5 days a week, like at some of the other pools. So you take Bunview, you take Glendale, you take Exline, Samuel Grand, and the Moore Park. These are in the southern half of the city where kids tend to come out more and swim in the summertime. And these areas here is only open 2 days per week. And other areas are open 5 days, some of those other swimming pools. So I think it's really a shame that the pools in the southern sector are only open 2 days per week. So this is why I will be supporting this amendment. Thank you so much.
I want to clarify something that Ms. Davis said. Are all the pools in southern Dallas open only 2 days a week?
No,
just these. Okay. Just these. Okay, good. Because it sounded like all of them were so. All right, Mr. Mr. Atkins.
I just want to comment, Carolyn. You know, I'm glad you brought this to our attention. You know, last year we talked about pools almost every year, but one thing we really don't talk about the safety. Swimming, you know, most children do not know how to swim, and so it's very important for our pools to be open so they do have that opportunity to learn how to swim. And I think that Paul, that what we need to do, I know at Toma Island we have a 3 day to teach them swimming in my district. I think that's one way that we get the kids there, the partnership up with SMU, with other organizations to teach swimming, because that's the problem, man. We need to make sure we have a tenant to go to those pools, but we need to have a magnet to drag those people to a swimming pool so that we'll be open every day. And I think that in the park department, I think you need to get an education tool or the measure. How do we drive the citizens to our public pool? What do we do? I know Ms. Carol, we all said, you get corporate America, make paint Coca-Cola at the bottom of the pool, and they give some money and invite the kids how to swim. But it's very important that we need to teach the citizens in Dallas how to swim, because there's most lives is passed during the summer that's at most of the lakes out there. Go ahead.
Thank you, Ms. Carol.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to ask one question. Do anyone know the population in our city of citizens 20 years and under? 20 years old now.
Can we get that? Can I get that information from somebody? That's very important that we know the population of our city, from people 20 years old and down, maybe 25 and down, but 20 I know and down. That's important for me. It helps me make a lot of decisions. Because they're citizens too, you know, and so we need to cater to their needs as well on a consistent and daily basis. They're just not in the area or the age to speak for themselves. And if indeed there are, let's say our population is 1.2 million, and let's just say that they are 600,000 or 700,000, I don't know what it is, maybe less than that. Then I want to make sure that we are accommodating them and the things that they need to have and will grow up into as citizens of the city as well. So when can I get that information? He's
you looking it up?
All right, good. Bring it on back to me. I'm cool, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to speak on behalf of the swimming pools as well. This last year, for example, Samuel Grand was closed, but the recreation center was closed there for renovation. This May of next year will be a totally new renovated Samuel Grand Recreation Center. On August 11th of this year, we opened the Samuel Grand Tennis Center. It's a wonderful tennis center that we have there, but now we even have a couple of tennis courts for 10 and under there. So we've got more and more people that will be coming to this regional park that Ms. Hunt and I share in our district. So I do believe that Samuel Grand will have the attendance that it should have. I think it's a well attended pool, but now with all the other amenities that we have in the pool, will justify going from 2 to 5 days. The closest pool would either be Skyline or Tootsie Park, which would be an average about 3.5 miles, perhaps 4 one way on either of the pools. And so, anyway, I would like to speak in favor of the going from 2 days per week to 5. On those pools. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I also support the Cultural Affairs Amendment.
Thank you. The only thing I wanted to add here is something that is just a personal point of view on these pools. Okay? Guys, the reason people aren't in those pools is they're old-style pools. They're bad products. Okay? We've got to get up, and we've got to spend some money on a real aquatic product for these citizens that are in the 20s. I mean, we're patching things together, and we can do it, and that's okay. But I mean, let's not act like we're doing good by opening a bad product up another couple of days that people don't want to swim in. That doesn't mean no one wants to. A few people do, but if we want to make a big difference, we're going to have to kind of sort that out in a major way. I'm not really opining on this budget amendment. Is just a whole strategy overall in our pool system. Okay, Mr. Atkins, I see you've got something here with Dallas Summer Musicals you may want to speak to.
Okay. Mayor, you know, the reasons what I want to speak to the Dallas Summer Musicals, I know they do have a contract with the city on the world of that, but also we are talking about the economic opportunity for the first part, and sometimes that when you have a product in one part of the city and you got a product downtown, you are competing against each other. And when you compete with each other, then there is a disconnect with the citizen here and with the city. I think the Dallas Summer Museum and the art people are talking now. At first they was not talking and trying to cooperate and try to find out how do they work a situation out. You look at the fire part, which is in Carolyn District, you know, next to the fire, when the fire is going on, the second largest generator revenue at the fire part is the Dallas Summer Musical. And Jake is doing a great job out there trying to get first
class act to come there. And he also competing, you know, with our downtown, which we do fund them. Last year, they raised close to about $2 million from the private sector, so we see they are trying to raise money there. But you look at the jobs that we have at the Fair Park, at Dallas Army Musical, you look at the concession, when people go there, they enjoy the nice play, but they also spend money at the concession, which they may get a small percent of overrides there. But you also look at the hotel that when people come into our town who stay to watch our product. I believe that we as citizens, and we're talking about economic opportunity, and I guess, Ryan, can you come forward? And when we talk about economic opportunity, and we talk about Fair Park, could you give us, do you know how much revenue do the Fair Park as a whole generate for the city of Dallas? You know, taxes, you know, revenue. Is that a probably $100 million? We got the Cotton Bowl. We have the OU game. We have the Grand Prairie game. So that's a whole lot of revenue that's generated in that particular area.
No, I don't have that number off the top of my head. You can see it.
But do you have an idea of that what the Fair generate? Is you think the Fair Park is a revenue generated for the city of Dallas?
Well, when the mayor was with the park board, we went through and did some calculations on gross revenue, and it's over $100 million that flows through that organization.
Okay.
An annual $130 to $40 million.
Okay, you said gross revenue.
I think we counted $180.
So not all of it goes to the park. You know, it's just money coming through.
But that's revenue money. Stream, but that's money coming through.
Correct.
College, what I'm trying to say, that's money coming through the Fair Park. But you also got a venue here with the Dallas Summer Musical who is there. If you lose that, that means that revenue would not be coming to the Fair Park, and that would be a vacant building. And so what I'm trying to say, they are competing downtown, and we need to help the Dallas Summer Musical to make sure the Fair Park is strong. And that's why I said we need to give them, and that's a whole lot of money, only for $50,000, to help them to say, hey, we're in the city of Dallas, we support the Dallas Summer Musical, and with opportunities, they can go and get more acts to come there. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Any other comments on that?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Paul, how much do we give to the Dallas Summer Musical now? What's their...
That's a cultural affairs question.
Other amenities. We'll put this on the board, and I'll support Mr. Atkins on this amendment. Is there a reason why we don't help them in giving them, Paul, some other things like this, an extra $50,000?
Again, that's a cultural affairs contract.
Oh, it's a culture. It's not a park. I'm sorry. I am so sorry. Okay, then. I will be supporting Mr. Atkin on this. I have some questions offline that I'll ask. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else on the Dallas Summer Music? Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have offered an amendment that would give $10,000 to the African American Museum, also a Fair Park institution, but not just a Fair Park institution. It is a premier African American repository, historical repository, in the United States, and it is the only museum of its kind in the Southwest. The $10,000 ask is for a specific reason. The African American Museum is attempting to bring to Dallas the traveling mural exhibit Rising Up. This is a booklet of the murals for anyone who would like to see it. Rising Up is a mural exhibit that was commissioned in 1938 at Talladega College in Alabama. Talladega is one of the nation's first all-black colleges. The murals were commissioned to show the opportunities at Talladega, but also the coming forth out of slavery. The murals were commissioned in three cycles, and the first cycle, installed at Talladega in 1939, commemorated the mutiny of the slave ship La Amistad. It depicted the uprising, the trial, and the subsequent return to Africa of the slaves on that ship. The companion series to the murals shows the Underground Railroad, the construction of the library at Talladega, and the continued resistance to slavery, and finally the coming out of slavery. Dr. Robinson, the museum director and founder, is the person that asked me to offer this, but that's because I have been working with him on helping to raise private funding to bring this exhibit to Dallas through the African American Museum. The museum season sponsors include American Airlines, Chase, Trammell Crow, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Friendship West, South Dallas Fairport Trust Fund, the Vin and Karen Prothro Foundation, Texas Instruments, Eugene McDermott Foundation, the Meadows Foundation, among others. They all support the museum as season sponsors, and some of them have specifically bought into supporting the bringing of this exhibit. The total amount needed to bring the exhibit to the Fairport is $180,000. A significant amount has been raised in the private sector. A bit is still needed, and that's why I brought this amendment to the council. It is significant for my bringing this to you to tell you that the competition for this exhibit is the Amon Carter in Fort Worth. If the exhibit does not go to the African American Museum, it will go to the Amon Carter in Fort Worth. And the Amon Carter is much better positioned financially, but this is an exhibit about the coming out of slavery, the coming out from slavery, and the founding of an all-black college, one of the first in the nation, as I said earlier. It ought to go to the African American Museum, and it ought to be in Dallas instead of at the Amon Carter. And so I urge your support. Again, I have the booklet if you want to see it. It's a beautiful, beautiful booklet. It shows the murals. And if you have any questions, I would be more than happy to address those.
Thank you, Mr. Cadena.
Judge, do you know when? Oh, first off, if we get to 10,000, we will get the exhibit.
Yes.
Okay.
Because of the significant amount that has been raised in the private sector already, and we're close to what we need, but we need this, and then we can also leverage that in the private sector.
And do we know when we'd get it and how long we'd have it?
The exhibit will open in October of this year, and it will run through February of 2013.
So we'll have it during the fair.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, that's the point.
That's the point.
We want it here during the fair, and the fair board.
That's where I was going with.
They're also contributing to the exhibit. Yes,
good.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you,
we'll
Mayor.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Blackman's been working. Get up there here. Right there, please. I know, but we're moving. Okay. Well, tell us real time what you got. Okay. So and then.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
What did you find out?
It's also known as Earn It, Keep It, Save It, which I think everybody has heard of that concept. And what, after talking with Mr. Allen, he's looking for a liaison from the City Hall organization to outreach to the community, and then working with United Way to setting up through Safe Space, through our rec centers, through other outlets to get them in the program to start utilizing this program.
Okay. What information don't you have that you were going to use?
I was going to go back because apparently San Antonio has mastered this program. So asking United Way why. What did they do that was so unique? Was it a city thing? Was it a private organization that masters, that makes them the model?
Was it United Way in San Antonio?
That must go now.
Okay, thank you for jumping in. Mr. Allen?
There is a website, so if you want to look at it, it's at unitedwaydallas.org, and it is Earn It, Save It, Keep It. And it has a fact sheet, which is pretty good about the whole program.
Yeah.
Okay
thank you very much.
That.
Appreciate it. Okay, we have, was there any amendment that I missed that we didn't talk about? Mr. Atkins? I'm sorry.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up, and this still kind of tie into the Dallas Summer Musical. It also ties into the first part, and you see why it's very important that project like this, we need to invest in first part. If we don't invest in first part, we're not going to have a great first part. And realize, you know, sometimes we talk about the region, but we talk about Dallas, Big D. And when we had an opportunity to compete against Fort Worth, we need to put up a shut up, because this is an economic opportunity to create more jobs. And this is coming here from October the 6th to February 28th. And you just imagine how many people are going to be at Fort Park who will go and spend that $25, whatever you spend, to go there to have opportunities to do. You look at the Grambling peripheral game going to be there. You look at the Texas OU game and all the other activities. And you got a great museum sitting there, which they probably going to raise almost 95% of the money to do that. They asked us for less than 5 to 7% to do it. Von Field, I support this, and I hope our colleagues, this is our fair part. This is not just about the city.
Okay. All right. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to step out a little bit on the limb and throw an omnibus amendment out there. Not because this is what I would do. This is what I'm kind of hearing in this group, and I may be mishearing. So now we start to carve on it. Okay. Mr. Cadane, I'm not going to suggest putting any money with libraries, and the reason is because I'm so aligned with you. I'm just afraid that we're spitting into the ocean here on a big, I think we got a big hour problem, and I think we've got I'm with you 100%. It just is amazing to me that you can spend an amazing amount and just get so little return on that. I think we've got to look at that for next year and say, how do we really take a step function on ours as more so than what we've got. Exactly. So here's what I was going to suggest, and you can write this on the board just so everybody, I would suggest the 220 in the pools, 60,000 in cultural affairs, however we decide to spend it, and 49,440 on Vita. Okay, as a as kind of a test program, Jerry, to see, and then come back and say, is this getting the returns we need? We got to figure out how to do that. Again, this is not I'm not saying this is what I would do. I'm saying I'm listening to different passions around and different questions. So I'm going to make that amendment. Do I have a second?
Can I get a question for ask somebody for?
Do you have a
I want to clarify.
Okay, you got a second. Now clarify.
I want to clarify. When you said Cultural First, 60,000, do that include the Dallas Summer Musical? Because we have another deal that Amar Golden had a deal. How do you break that?
I'm saying 60,000 for the whole. Ms. Monroe.
Given how little 60,000 is, talk about spitting into the wind. For the entire cultural affairs budget, I would be willing to look at dividing that among 50,000 for the summer musicals and 10,000 for the project that Ms. Hill is recommending.
Okay, so that's the answer to that question.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, now discussion or amendments to that amendment. Be open for it. Ms. Davis.
I would like to do some amendments to this before we
$10,000. All right. Let's hold on here. She's writing on the board. So you're basically offering another amendment, okay? All right. Let's start now. But meet, draw a little dotted line after that, after the Vita. Right there. Just draw a dotted line or a hard line.
Hard line.
There we go. Now start. One person needs to talk at a time. Now start another whole process. Go ahead, Ms. Davis.
Okay,
now. Slow it up here.
$48,440.
Well, make, you got to make an amendment, Ms. Davis.
Okay, let me take the extra, the
50,
put the difference in the pool.
Okay, so 206 in pools,
okay. Is it raining?
$211,000.
Does that add up to $329,440?
This is Miss. Let me make it clear. This is Miss Coop's deal, and I like the way she added this up. So.
So both of those amendments total the $329,440.
Thank you. Okay, we've got them. Okay, so any other amendments that we want to consider? Miss Alonzo's.
Mm-hmm.
What, Miss Alonzo?
I just want to ask her if she would take a little add to the amendment and put the 9 into the pool and then the out of the $48,440.
That's what I got.
Yeah.
To her.
The
women.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
$329,440. Out of the musical, you give them the to add to the $220 to complete the $220, and then the rest of the musical, which would be $30 something.
Right here. Mr. Atkins.
Okay.
Okay.
Take that off one.
We'll come back.
Paul.
Yeah. He doesn't know.
Well, okay, he knows about hours, right?
He won't know.
Gene, hey, question, the hours. The 220 number would buy you what for the pool? What do they buy? What do they buy?
3 more days per week for 5 pools.
220. So anything less than 220 would buy you what? If we had 211, we talk about, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out.
It's an increment that's, you can't divide it by. By a fractional increment per day, so it's.
That's all we need. Just add enough. Yeah, we can find that.
Okay. I just.
Okay.
I could leave it like that.
One more fact that's just come in: the city of San Antonio's contribution to the VITA program is $137,000. So that's how. Just give you a sense of what they pay for. Okay.
And I will say on that deal, that $137,000, I'm going to say it loud and clear. Y'all realize they brought in $60 million, 1% of that, $600,000, and we're arguing over $300,000. How ridiculous is that? How ridiculous is that? Man.
Okay. I was just going to ask Jerry, on the mayor's compromise, well, his suggestion was a 49, and we went down from 49 to 10 from your request of 200. Since you know that it's like it is, what number could we start with that you'd be? Yeah, we know what you want. We understand what it is, but I'm trying to work it up now to see what number is it that you might.
I'll tell you what, let's do this. What'd you say it was? 137,000. I'll drop my number down from 200 to $137,000. I'll personally, over the next 6 months, where I'm going with this, I'll personally over the next 6 months be the council member that's going to be involved in this. And I'll make sure that we mirror whatever San Antonio's done, and I guarantee you we will get a return on the investment of easily 150 APR, could be 200 APR, Mayor.
All right, great. So what's your...
137,000.
Then what would you do with it to take out? What would you cut? Make that a third amendment.
Let's see. I'm not... My money's going to... I wouldn't cut any of it out because my money's going to pay for all of it anyway.
We can't do that. We'll start acting like this.
Well, I mean, that's the reality of it. And why are we having a discussion over $300,000 is it beats me. Why don't we just approve the whole thing? Because I guarantee, but anyway, what would I take out?
I want to entertain your motion in a serious manner.
All right, let's entertain it. I would take... Well, I tell you what I take out pools. And the reason I'm taking out pools is because I'm going to pay for them come summer. The money that comes back in will pay for them, so I'm going to take pools out. But realizing...
What's that math, Gene?
Realizing that 137
minus 49.
You know what I'm saying?
That's 80, 87. Take 87 away from pool hours, and then that's the amendment.
Well, so we got.
Which one are we starting?
What's 87 minus 220? I mean, 220 minus 87.
$133.
Pool hours, $133. African American, $10. Dallas Summer Musicals, $50. Vita, $137. Does that add up? I just.
If you subtract one day from it, that's not the number.
No. I came out. I backed into that number.
Right, but it's
logical
to subtract one day from it.
And I'm trying to meet the 329. I'm trying to come to 329.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
on. Mm-hmm. Let's get these numbers up first. 3:30, right?
3:30.
That's it.
3:30.
It works. Okay.
3:30.
All right. So we'll take out the $600 or something.
Yeah.
All right. Ms. Hunt. And then, I'm sorry, Mr. Carraway, and then Ms. Hunt. Mr. Carraway wanted to speak first.
Let me go back.
So that's the Third Amendment, guys.
All right.
We've got a third. We got three ideas up here. Let's start trying to opine around these things. Go ahead.
The $200 that you're asking for, Jerry, is investment, and which is bringing us some money. Mm-hmm. I understand that. So put a pin in that. I totally understand it. Okay. Now, Mary. Is it any way, and to Nail,
yeah,
Mr. Atkins, and to the mayor, separate from this, let's just say this opportunity was not before us today on this amendment. If we had already passed the budget and this proposal came to us in November, would we have to wait till the second budget cycle to find the $137,000, or could we deal with this from another pot somewhere else through economic development? It's about making money, it's about investment through somewhere. Is there another way how we could make this investment on behalf of the city that would give the necessary amount of money to do what you're talking about? Does it have to go through this particular process?
It has to go through a process.
A process.
A process, and
okay,
you would have to not spend it on something else. The budget is balanced right now.
All right.
So you would have to say that later in the year you're going to cut something else out of the budget to cover this.
Now, let me ask this. Okay. All right. So it's a possibility that some money, if we find it, or if we are, if we find ourselves in the black and we're moving forward and the hotel is doing good and everything is happening and we have a window of money, could at that point what you're requesting be fully funded if we were to get to that point? It's a winning deal. I'm with that. I think now it's about timing in which pot it comes out of. If the council are committed to doing this and making this move forward, and what would be the proper time is what I'm saying, Jerry, to get this done? And is there another pot? Is there another opportunity?
I think you're going to have to start this now because the tax season is like around the corner.
So if we get involved, okay, then let's go this route then. What if we begin this, Jerry, on a minimum basis to get it started, but increase it and make this a priority and increase as we move forward and find the dollars? I think our commitment is to say, hey, Jerry, this is great. But now, out of the 329, everybody wants to get something happening. But we can ill afford to take this off the table and not do it effectively. So if we get it started, that's the commitment to you. But then another commitment would be, let's make it a priority so that if we find money as we move forward, then we can put it into this investment.
Can I
make a friendly suggestion real quick? I hear what you're saying, because I think Councilman Carraway, it really goes back to your pool. You've been passionate on the pool, so we're off say $90,000 on the pool. $90,000. What I say, well, let's do, at the end of the day, come April 15th, we're going to know how much money we brought in on that. And anything above $900,000 is your $90,000. But you see what I'm saying, Mayor?
I do. I don't think. Let's hold that thought, because I want to come back to that. Ms. Hunt wanted to speak, and then.
Okay. You know, it's hard at the end of our budget evaluation when we have what is relatively a small amount of money compared to our $2.5 billion budget, and we're going to spend the most amount of time talking about this amount of money, and it's a small amount of money. I don't think it's that beneficial for us to put tiny amounts of money on a lot of different things, because I don't think it gets us that much of a return. I think what helps more is the type of thing that Mr. Carraway and Ms. Alonzo and others have suggested about our pools. That has a definite large impact, and it's a large amount of money.
I think Jerry's point about an investment that can have such rewards for our families who live in Dallas and also benefits back to the city in the form of sales tax, I think that's just a terrific program. I think we have to do that. I think it's not smart to turn away from it. I would suggest a fourth way here.
Okay, right before the fourth way, well, you got it.
Which would be, for pools, the full amount, $211,220. I'm sorry, I was looking over this one next door. And then for the VITA, the rest of it on the VITA program.
That's 109.
And then I want to take out something and add it back to this.
Sure.
I was looking at where we spend our money in our courts, and I noticed that we give our 10 full-time judges a car allowance for $14,148. I think this is more important than that. I'd like to see us put that $114,000 on the VITA program. I think the return will be significant. So
you add another $114,000 on top of that?
No, just $14,000.
Oh, just
$14,000. Onto the VITA.
That'd be $137,000, and then courts get cut by
$14,000.
Okay. All right, Mr. Atkins, did you, Ms. Morgova?
Huh? Excuse me, you need to add the cut.
You add a cut. You got to add a cut. You're taking some from another budget item. Courts. You take from a court, you got to add that on there. So you know where you're taking from.
Ms. Morgova? All right, guys, one meeting. Go.
Yeah, I have a question about the VITA program. And I don't know, Mr. Allen, if you can answer it, but it seems to me that what we're buying are staff people primarily. Isn't that correct? I mean, whatever amount we put in.
Yes, Mr. Allen did recommend doing a staff person, but after talking with United Way, they would like assistance with marketing and outreach. Those are the line items in their budget that get cut or that are not as funded, and it would be simply outreach of suggested door-to-door. It's a true grassroots effort of going to the community and sitting down face.
And did they give you a number as to what that would cost?
They did not give a specific number.
I mean, because we seem to be working from the assumption that, you know, whatever amount we put into it is going to be sufficient. And it seems to me that you want to look at it as we're going to buy this for $50,000, we're going to buy this for $100,000, not just
I know.
We're going to put money into it. It feels very vague to me. And while I support it to some extent, I just am curious to know what we're buying. So that's my question.
Because they did suggest door hangers,
mm-hmm.
and which is the printing expense. And they don't have a, I mean, I can go back and ask them to give me the budget, the actual number. But they said marketing and outreach would be on their wish list.
Yeah. I will say overall that my inclination at this point is...
I want everything to be quiet around here.
Thank you, Mayor.
That as of now, I support the recommendation that's in the top left-hand corner, the one that is four items up on the left. Yes, that's what I support. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The number on the right is not right, okay? She wanted four. She wants that to be 137, okay, and not 123.
Okay, we're a little bit short.
That's why you bracket. You got to put the right number in the bracket. Right.
The $14,000 didn't quite make up the difference to get you to 137.
Well, you're okay with that.
Yeah. It gets you to 133.
I apologize. I thought you were saying 131. Okay. All right, so we've got four ideas. Let's just do a show of hands. I'm going
to
Mr. Carraway.
Yeah, I just want to just bring one thing, and I was asking the city attorney, and they somewhat clarified it. Angela speaks to the reducing the judiciary judges in their car lounge. They've accepted, basically they have a contract. And so it may be and it may not be, I think, but before we can just take something from them, we've already...
Well, if that's the case, if that's part of their salary, let's just take that bottom line out about reducing the judiciary. The VITA program gets the balance.
But they're saying that it may not be a part of the salary, but whatever.
That's all right. I'd rather not confuse it. Okay. I just thought I'd found a little bit of money that we could throw at it. If not, let's just have the balance on the VITA program from 329.
Long story short, you just saying finish two
years. Mr. Mayor, thank you. Mr. Allen, I have a suggestion that is number two revised. If we took 39 from pools, that would leave pools at 172,440, and it would put VITA at 49.
That's a separate one. Do a separate one, I see.
Well, I don't really want it to be mine. I want to see if that's something that's Allen would consider.
You know, I'm
not considering number two because it doesn't have that.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm saying if you put 39 on number two, if you put 39 in VITA and take the 39 from pools, is what I'm saying. Leave everything else like it is. That would put VITA at 49 and it would put pools at 172. No, it's not number one because in number one you didn't have culture. You didn't give culture the 50.
I think you got
totally
the 172 and the 39
is not part of that. So it would be 49. It should be 49. Right. Okay. So it would be 172 pools, cultural 50, musical 48,440, museum 10, and VITA 49. Now, VITA might be supposed to be 49,440, but I'm taking 39 from pools and putting it in VITA. That's what I'm doing. And that's Ms. Davis' amendment, number two. That's what I'm doing.
All right, so we have five amendments now. That's item five. Okay, I
want to
see a show of hands.
Mr. Mayor, thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, because I believe that when you got the information from Ms. Davis, my colleague Ms. Davis, I asked if we could substitute that, and that was to do the 220 for the pool, 50 for the cultural fair, 39,440 for Dallas Summer Musical, 10,000 for the African American Museum, and 10,000 for the VITA program.
She needs to write it down.
I had asked that before.
What are we doing here?
Well, I guess you could call it number six, even though it was supposed to be number three.
So is number, you want another amendment?
Yes.
You gotta give it a figure.
We'll call it out.
Call it out.
It's 220 for the pools, as we've been talking about it all this time. 50,000 for the cultural affairs. 39,440 for the Dallas Summer Musicals. 39,440. 10,000 for the African American Museum. And 10,000 for the VITA program.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, may I please?
Sure.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, 220 for the kids, for the constituents that cannot speak. Okay, first of all. And it's mostly for the kids. Our kids. 50,000 cultural affairs, 39,440 for the Dallas Summer Musical, 10,000 for African American Museum, and 10,000. It's a start, as you mentioned. I agree with Mr. Allen as a former VITA volunteer. I agree.
that that's something that we have to work on together. I believe, Ms. Soom, if you could help us with that, we can do that just like we asked to help with spreading the message about the spray, mosquito, and all. We can do that together. And I believe that that was from certain programs. I think that if we get all departments to participate, we can do that. Because we need to let our constituents know what's going on and what they can benefit from. Because that's going to have to come from them to let whoever's preparing their taxes to be able to get it and to be able to get that opportunity. I agree that once we get it, we are wholeheartedly convinced that it will come back to our constituency and to our city. But we're talking about the kids right now, that I hope that you will take that into consideration. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Last word.
Last word, I was asked about the benefits, too, and what would we do with the money, and not sure about things. According to the United Way, in 2009, they did 4,664 income tax preparations. And these were flyers that they sent out. This is how many they sent out, 5,500 in 2010. Last year they sent out 7,600 and in generating $12,400,000 in returns. They did 7,600 flyers. What they're looking for, San Antonio has done 30,000. And so this is the result. It's really where this money will go. We'll have a focus on this, and $10,000 is not enough. If we're going to get up there and do the $60 million, we need to be there with San Antone, be on equal playing field with them. And I say, let's make it happen. Let's show this money coming back in, and utilize the money when it comes back for quality of life issues.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say one thing about the pools, since we fight over the pools every year. We usually, from our park department, get an analysis of how many children, how many hours that they spend at the pools. One of the issues has been, with during this discussion, it may or may not have been brought up, I don't recall, but is that some of the recreation centers are closing near the pools, and so this would provide some kids with some extra opportunities since they weren't able to go to the recreation center during that time. But the analysis of coming up with the four pools that we're keeping open, the five pools, can I ask you, how did you come up with that analysis of five? I understand the ones where the recreation centers are closing, but in my district, and I have two pools, one's been closed and the other one only has hours for swim lessons in the morning a couple of days a week. So I just want to know how that is. And the only reason I ask that is not to throw my pool in there. It's just to make, it's just to add clarity to what the issue is that surrounds the pools. It's not, I want my pool open, opposed to somebody else saying, I want my pool open. It really needs to be done by the Park and Recreation Department, an analysis of that. And let me just ask Paul about it, maybe that would clarify it a little bit. How did you come up with the five pools, Paul? Or whoever came up with the five pools?
In your case, but the pool, one of the pools.
I don't want that. In my case, I don't. I'm just making that as an example.
Based on the number of pools per geographical area, primarily coupled with attendance. We did a scattergram that coupled attendance and geographical area, so we got the most coverage with the best, with the most attended pools. So that was the 11 that were left over.
And those are the five that...
Those are the five that were eliminated based on the coverage, you know, the close coverage from other pools, surrounding pools, and also considering their attendance.
So out of the five, out of those five, which ones are near recreation centers that...
X-Line, Samuel Grand.
No, which ones are near recreation centers that are going to be closed for the summer?
Samuel Grand.
So that's just one. So now...
I need Martinez.
Okay, so now there's three. Okay, so what I'd like to ask, Mayor, is why the three pools then? Why did we come up with those three pools? What was the analysis for adding those three pools?
Because those are the ones that have only 2 days, two days per week.
Of all the five that we mentioned, they all have 2 days, that they open 2 days a week only.
Right, because of the analysis that the park department did, which was that there was not enough.
And that is not true. When you go to X-Line last year, it was full of kids. And I went to those pools last year. The city staff wasn't at those pools last year.
Okay, so the reason that I came up with what I did was because I took those five pools and I reduced it by one day. Okay? And Ms. Davis and I talked about that. So it was a reduction. It was number two.
Number two.
Which is, hang on, Mayor, okay? First of all, I wanted to set that up for the rest of the audience that's listening. It's important for us to all understand that in the Park and Recreation Department, they do this analysis. But because we have council members who feel very strongly about it, they added it up to 5 days. The reduction of one day got you a little bit more money to do some more programs. So what I'm asking Ms. Alonso is, are you willing to accept that or not? And if you're not, then we can move on from that. If you're willing to accept the reduction of one day, you know, then we can talk about that money, or maybe we should even just vote on it. Do we want to vote on 4 days or 5 days? Because that's the money that we're spending. That's the money where the play is coming from.
Yeah, but Ms. Collins got a whole different strategy as well.
Now, let's just vote. I'm just ready to vote.
That's
what I just vote. It's going to be what it is.
Okay? On each of these amendments, either
the
equal or
the score. Because I'm trying to talk about it.
Okay? Just vote on one just right now. Okay? You have to pick item one. Okay? Show of hands on that. Okay? Three. Okay, item two, just write three down there. Three, thank you. Item two, we've got two. Item two, thank you.
Wait a minute, No, okay, let's do this again.
You have more than two.
Item one, show of hands. Okay, you're not voting for nine. Okay, we got two now. Item two, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Thank you. Now we're good. Item three, we've got three. Okay. Item four, we've got two.
Mm-hmm.
Item five, we got one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And item six,
mm-hmm.
we got one. Okay. Item five and six kind of go away. Okay? So, did you guys vote enough? Where would you put your vote, Ms. Hussle?
Item two.
Okay.
Okay.
Item two, so that's seven.
Number two.
Where?
Number two.
Number two. So that now we got eight votes. The meeting's over.
Thank you.
Just joking. We had eight votes around spending $211,000 on opening up five pools for five more days. Four more days.
Four. I think it's more than that because four is only 150.
It goes from two to five.
Right.
Two to five. Three more days. Cultural Affairs, $50,000. The Dallas Summer Musicals, $48,000. African American Museum, $10,000. And the Vita Program, $10,000. Okay?
Mark, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Can I ask Paul Dyer to come forward, please? Since we're talking about pools and on the budget. And we went through this through the budget for the last two or three years. What are we doing in the parks department to push the lesson swimming to make sure the kids get there? I mean, this is very important. I mean, we open up pools and say people are not coming to different pools. We go look at it, but it's something we're not doing in the park department. And I'm trying to make sure that we have money set aside to push those kids to swim or what. What are we doing? If we're not doing, what can we do to make sure? Because I know the mayor said we need to go to aquatics or whatever, but we need to find a solution so every year we'll not be talking about the same thing over and over again.
Programmatically, we have every year teach kids a swim program. We have scholarships for kids. We have funding that's not utilized because we can't get enough kids to sign up, but we pull kids out of the rec center. We teach 4,000 kids to swim every summer. We also have 11,000 kids that we reach through the school organizations. We have water safety programs. We go to the schools. There are 11,000 kids in that program. 4,000 learn to swim each summer. If we could do anything, we could ramp up the teaching kids swim program to get more nonprofit dollars in to help us with that.
Question. With this money, do you got money in your budget to ramp up to get the kids to learn how to swim? Because that's very important to me because, number one, there's so many kids in the city that cannot swim and do not have a place to go to learn how to swim. And I think that's very important.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fairway.
Yeah, Mayor and Paul, I wanted to ask you about Baker Same in the Spray Ground. You can get with me on the sidebar, but I know that's in the making, right?
It's in the making, yes.
Okay. Let me, and to Mr. Atkins' point, you know, I'm a marketing fanatic, so I think you're speaking of us doing more outreach and marketing to create the excitement with the Splash Day and all of that should be combinated in a much grander style so that we can, at the beginning of the swimming season, and this is constructive criticism of that I'm saying that we should make sure that we enhance. I know that we're doing it, but we need to enhance that. Plus, Mayor, DISD, as related to teaching people how to swim, we should team with DISD and those four or five indoor pools that they have that are unused. They are unused, and no one is using them. DISD is not using them, nor does the public use those pools, to my knowledge. Now, they may use them a little bit or something.
We used to, but the charges, the cost of those
pools. That's why the mayor, the charges is what they just said. We have five additional swimming pools where seniors and kids could come if we set with DISD, wipe out those charges because we're not charging them for swimming in our pools, pretty much, I'm saying. And it should kind of balance off. It doesn't make sense to have a pool over at Kimball High School and that's closed. It doesn't make sense to have one at Malcolm X at the foot of the bridge that's indoor and closed. One behind the Veterans Hospital that's indoor and no one is using those pools. So what we need to do is bridge relationship about those pools, and that'll probably solve the pool problem in the upcoming debate when we face our next budget.
One thing you can feel good about, every spray ground in the city you drive by is always packed.
Yeah,
always.
And I'm just going to say
it's a good product.
It's a good product. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Paul.
Paul, if the council could get a report on how many of the pools that are open were open this summer, how many got swim teams, and how many had swimming lessons. I think it's a very important thing because I think as council members, we can definitely promote that and we can definitely help you with that.
Right.
Thank you.
As I mentioned, we have 11,000 kids we touch in the school system. We go to them, teach them water safety, and try to get them to come swim and sign up for the lessons. And so we're doing a lot of things marketing-wise. I think it's been very productive.
Yeah, but I really think that we need to know as council members how many of our swimming pools actually have swimming teams, and then how many at our swimming pools we're actually giving the lessons and how many. And thank you. Ma'am?
And Mr. Allen's next. Mr. Allen. Okay.
So, did I hear you say you did 11,000?
11,000 kids a week. We have programs for 11,000 kids in the schools. We go to the schools, we bring them in, we go in the classrooms, and we teach them water safety programs.
You got 11,000, you got what, 160,000 kids in school?
Right.
11,000?
So that's what,
11,000.
That's a small staff.
Exxon is across the street from Charles Rice. I would appreciate it if somehow we can get some information to the principal over at Charles Rice
and let them know about, you know, any swim teams that X-Line might be offering, any swim classes
right.
during the summer months. Because, I mean, you got a school right across the street from X-Line. And so if we can work with X-Line and Charles Rice, I mean, those two schools can marry each other. I mean, X-Line in the elementary school. So I think that'll help too, Paul. And I do agree with Ms. Madrono. I mean, we got to help you, but you got to let us know so we can help you.
I have one more question. How many, in addition to that report, how many of the recreation centers that are near the pool, how many of those kids actually go to the swimming pool? Because I know that some just stay in the recreation center. And do they participate in the pool? Do we have records of that, that they're in a summer program at the recreation center, but do they come to the pools to utilize that?
Every summer camp that we have in the system has a swim day, whether they're beside a rec center or not, they still get to go swimming one day a week.
Will you add that to the report? Thank you.
Thank you. All right, one last item today is the amendment on our judiciary system that is... There is a motion to add two full-time folks, and I want to entertain, first of all, I'd like to entertain the co-chair of the judiciary, Ms. Hasso, to speak to this, because I think she's changed her point of view in this. Ms. Hill, I think you actually submitted the amendment itself. So.
Mr. Mayor, as is not uncommon, it was not my idea. I wordsmithed.
Okay.
And that's why my name is on, simply because I wordsmithed the idea with Ms. Hasso's.
Right.
And that's how I got my name on.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Judge Hill. I do want to say that when we last spoke about this, I didn't speak up, and I apologize to my J&T committee for not speaking up as the co-chair. So today, as the co-chair, I do speak up, and I want to say, with all due respect to Jerry Allen, Steffi Cadane, Linda Coop, and my co-chair, Angela Hunt, for all the hard work that we put in. We put in 15 hours in meetings, three separate meetings, vetting and interviewing and looking at the judges that were in play for these positions. I wish we had known about the ability to expand the judiciary, but I think with this amendment, I would ask not only that we get some metrics provided to us by Judge Solis, and I know he's in the room, as well as Gloria Lopez, who is the Carter, who is the administrative person for the court. Provide us with some metrics, and we talked about this in a committee. Set as a goal to provide 3, 6, and 9 month updates on where we are to meet our goal of improving our court systems. In addition, we've already, through Angela Hunt and A.C. Gonzalez in our last budget briefing on technology, we know that technology is a huge part of improving our court systems. Again, had we known that we could expand these positions, we would have had a different outcome, I think, in the J&C. So for that reason, I think that this is the right thing to do. I think that when we have metrics provided to us and we set those as goals, we can honestly say that we've got the best slate of judges that we can come up with at this moment, and that includes the two additional full-time positions with an additional associate being appointed to the associates group. So with that, honestly, I think this is the right thing to do. We do have metrics that we're going to try to meet as a goal to make sure that our judiciary understands what our goals are, and that we can all work together to get to a to do the right thing.
Thank you, Ms.
So that is my motion.
Wait, let's be clear about what the motion is. What is the motion?
As you can see on the amendment, there is no funding needed for this motion. The motion as it stands is to add two full-time and one associate positions to the municipal court judiciary staff, and persons assigned to those positions shall be Cheryl Williams, Tim Gonzalez, and Rick Logan.
So let me just, from a process standpoint, this has not been posted, so we don't actually vote on this till the budget is voted on.
That's correct.
okay, on the 19th. So the purpose of this is for a show of hands and any discussion we want, any information need to be getting. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you. I do have some questions about this, and I guess, AC, would you be the right one? AC, so these two full-time judges would be acting sort of like associate judges, right? I mean, they would be called in the same way that associate judges are called?
Yes.
No?
What they would be doing is taking the work that associate judges are currently doing.
So associate judges are called on an as-needed basis, correct?
Right.
And they get paid, it's my understanding, for what, 4 hours, whether they work 4 hours or not?
Yes, the work rule right now is that there's a four-hour minimum when they're called to provide services.
Okay. So these judges, if they're full-time judges, aren't they going to make a full-time salary with benefits?
Yes.
Do associate judges have benefits?
No.
So is the idea that the two full-time judges, if we go ahead with this, would always be called first to make sure that they got in 40 hours a week?
It would be my assumption that the administrative judge would make sure that the full-time judges, all of them, have at least 40 hours of work to be done.
So they wouldn't be called.
No, they're not on call.
But associate judges are on call, aren't they? Right. Well, how do these two full-time judges, they don't have a full-time court. They do.
If I might illustrate with some examples, as an example, the magistration that goes on at Lewis Terrace is an activity that we call in associate judges to do. It varies, the descriptions of about how much time it takes varies, but there's an amount of time that's done at least twice a day, every day of the week, every day of the year, to magistrate prisoners there at Lewis Terrace. Rather than having an associate judge that is called out and is then paid a minimum of 4 hours, during those two times during the day, a full-time judge would show up and do that work, whatever that work is, and it's for an hour or two or four or six. It would be up to the administrative judge to make sure that it is handled by a full-time judge if, you know, the schedule is it's necessary to make that happen. I mean, it doesn't mean that an associate judge may show up for a number of different reasons, but you will have that work, as an example, being done by a full-time judge.
Which is now done by an associate judge.
Yes.
Why do we have 17, 18, or 19 associate judges? Do we put all of them to work? Do they all wind up getting some work in the course of a year?
I really can't speak to the exact number as to, you know, whether or not it's 17, 18, or it might have been 19 or 20. What the number was to create a list of available or possibly available associate judges to be called in for, you know, if it's that magistration or community courts, or to fill in for another judge who's called in sick or et cetera. And they go down the list, and they call to see who's available and desiring to go ahead and take that job. Of that list, there are some judges that are always willing. There's others that are not as willing, and so they have found that it takes that number in order to make the schedules that they have when time is required of them.
Do we have information, AC, records that show us in the course of the year which associate judges work how many hours?
I have some information with regards to the judges over the last year or so in terms of how much they have earned. And there's about four or five, I believe, that had earned about $45,000, let's say.
And those are like the busiest ones.
Those are the busiest ones. And then there's others that were earning less. And so we try to get some idea that, you know, just how it was spread out, and there is a spread in terms of the use of the associates again, based on their availability and their desire to work.
You know, it'd be kind of interesting. There's a lot of effort that goes into both the ad hoc judiciary committee and the judicial nominating committee in choosing these associate judges and full-time judges. And it seems to me if we have associate judges that are working very, very little, they're never available. I know that's partly their decision, but that would be good information to know as we're choosing, I think, which ones actually are fairly readily available and which ones aren't. So, you know, I look at this and I think maybe this is more something. This isn't really a budget amendment because we're not moving money around. But I'm thinking it's more of a policy decision. Do we want to have that many full-time judges, and do we want to have that many associate judges, seeing as how some of them will probably get very little work and maybe don't want very much work? You know, it just looked to me like this was more of a policy kind of decision that we should look at and take some time to decide whether we want to even do this or not. I mean, given that we're having these full-time judges and they're going to be paid as well, they're going to be paid like a full-time judge, they're going to be earning benefits, but they're basically doing work that we now have associate judges doing for less cost. So, I mean, it just seems to me like this is more of a policy decision that would bear looking into a little further. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson. Just a couple of comments. One, I think it is a policy decision, but I've been told it is a budget decision because we've got to isolate the individuals, and we have to kind of determine how many full-time people we have in a budget. So that's why it's falling under the budget issue. But it is a policy issue, a strategic one. Ms. Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just to be clear on what's being proposed, when we talk about what our full-time judges do and what our associate or part-time judges do, our full-time judges are at the courthouse or at our community courts, and they are hearing cases, correct?
Yes.
Our part-time judges have a couple of functions. Their primary function is to arraign defendants over at the Lou Sterrett Jail, correct?
That's one of the functions, yes.
And their other function is to fill in for full-time judges when those full-time judges can't fulfill their duties for illness or other personal reasons such as vacation, right?
Yes.
And with our part-time judges, what we've done is use them as a pool, as a group that we can call on when we need folks to go over to Lou Sterrett. Lou Sterrett is a 7-day-a-week job. There is a morning docket and an afternoon docket. And when we schedule our part-time judges, we schedule them for the whole day.
Well, we schedule them for a 4-hour minimum.
My understanding is we schedule them for the entire day and that they will work the 4 hours in the morning and the 4 hours in the afternoon. And so are we talking about having full-time judges work over there full-time? That will be their job, is to work the docket at Lou Sterrett?
Well, that's going to be a scheduling issue that the administrative judge will take on. We just know that the requirement will be there for them to be doing that work and to be part of that staffing of that workload.
And the statement that's inherent in this budget amendment is that there is no cost to the city. Is there an efficiency that we're gaining from this?
I don't know that there is an efficiency. There is an offset of cost. I think Ms. Grayson correctly pointed out that there's a premium when you look at the cost of a full-time judge versus an associate. There's the pension, benefits portion of it, et cetera.
Okay, well, let's talk about that premium. What is that premium?
At a minimum, it's about 16%. depending on some of the assumptions that you might make with regards to the fill-in time for their vacation, etc., the estimate could be as much as 28%. But that premium is offset to a certain extent, or to a full extent, the way I'm kind of been looking at it, through the inefficiency, if you will, about how we use the associate judges to be doing work, say, at Luceriat, where they're brought in for four-hour minimums, maybe for that total 8 hours, and there's not all of that work to be done.
Let's talk about that for a second, because the inefficiency there is an inefficiency that we can directly address. Because what's going on right now is we're paying part-time judges for 4 hours, whether they work an hour or 45 minutes. We're paying them for 4 hours. And then they come back in the afternoon, and we pay them for another 4 hours. And they may work 45 minutes, or they may work the full 4 hours. Wouldn't it make more sense, and wouldn't we save more dollars, if we simply made a policy decision that we're not going to pay people for not doing work? And so if they're there for an hour, they're paid for an hour. If they're there for 4 hours, we pay them for 4 hours. Wouldn't that eliminate the inefficiency that you're pointing out that exists currently with our part-time judges, AC?
Possibly, but what my understanding is that when that has been attempted in the past, it didn't really work out that way. That to get individuals to come in and do that work was taking that four-hour minimum. If they were paid on the basis of what you suggested, for them to be coming out and just being paid an hour or whatever it was, that they wouldn't respond. And so it evolved into the policy that we now have.
Well, let's come at this a different way then. The full-time judges, we've heard that they're going to be out there full-time. But if they're only working 45 minutes in the morning, what are they doing the rest of the 3 hours and a quarter?
Well, then that's going to mean that the administrative judge is going to have other work scheduled for them to be doing, for them to be fully occupied with the rest of that 40 hours to
okay.
make up that time.
Then let's step back a second. Why can't we do that with the associate judges and
well,
ensure that they're busy the full 4 hours? Can't we do that?
I don't know that the way the schedules work is going to be conducive for that.
Why?
But well,
why can we do it with full-time judges?
Sure
we can do it with part-time.
I'm not sure that you can. I really don't know. But I'm explaining as far as an analysis of the way it's been working and the workload that is there. We have been paying, if you will, a premium for the way that it's been done.
I understand that. I'm not asking about whether or not we have a premium. Judge Solis, can you shed some light on this?
Yes, ma'am. The associate judges do more than just 45 minutes or whatever amount of time it takes to lose their docket. They come back to our regular court and do probable cause affidavits.
And so they're busy the full 4 hours?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, very good. Well, then that eliminates this argument that we have any inefficiencies with our part-time judges. It sounds like they're busy the full 4 hours. They're doing 4 hours of work. We're getting 4 hours benefit from them. So if we come back and look at the full-time judges, and I'm going to direct this to AC Judge, thank you. If we come back and look at our full-time judges, we come back to the fact that we have a premium on them of 16 to 28%. Because of benefits and leave time, and yet with our part-time judges, we just heard that we do get the full benefit of the 4 hours of work in the morning and the full 4 hours of work in the afternoon. So it seems to me that clearly it's more expensive to consider hiring full-time judges to do this when we're having to pay benefits to them, when we can have part-time judges do the same work without paying benefits. And that's not a question. That's a point based on the fact that we've just been presented. So I'm not clear on how we're gaining something by doing this. How are we gaining something? And AC, let me ask you this: How long have you been examining this issue? I know you've been working on the courts for well over a year now in examining
efficiencies, how we can do things better. How long have you been looking at this particular issue of hiring additional judges, full-time judges?
4 or 5 days.
4 or 5 days. And why is that?
Because the idea was just recently presented.
So this wasn't an idea that came out of your efficiency analysis?
No.
So this was an idea that simply came up to address a political issue so that we can ensure that we have judges that certain council members want to serve as full-time judges and get benefits at the expense of taxpayers. Can someone who is supporting this enlighten me as to how this benefits the city of Dallas and simply not the attorneys who are friends of council members who are being proposed to serve as full-time judges? Can someone explain that?
Do you have Ms. Hill speaking next, so she probably would want to do that.
I look forward to hearing that, and I'll hold my remarks for a moment.
Thank you. Ms. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm delighted to address this issue because I'm the person who, for 5 years as a full-timer, had the spirit docket. It is unfortunate that my esteemed colleague, Ms. Hunt, has not had the opportunity to live in the system and therefore understand it more fully. I admire her efforts, but you really do have to live in that system to fully understand it. Judge Solis has been my colleague for several years, but Judge Solis did not have the spirit docket on a regular basis as I did. The way that associates began doing spirit was, because I went to England, they held the position open because I was to be back in a year, and so they had associates doing it. That was in 1991. I came back from England in 1992, and not long thereafter, we expanded the trial court. We had more trial courts added, so we needed more trial judges. The split was not based on associates do just spirit and the full-timers do the trial docket. The split was based on the fact that I needed to be back downtown and somebody had to do spirit. That's how that tradition got started. The spirit docket is an 8:30 docket, a 4:30 docket, and at that time it was an 11:30 p.m. docket. The 11:30 p.m. docket no longer exists. The 8:30 and 4:30 dockets take anywhere between 15 minutes and 1 hour, depending on the efficiency of the judges and the number of prisoners. We call it the chain. That means the number of prisoners. If you can have 3 prisoners or you can have 200. If you have 200, it's probably going to take you an hour to magistrate all 200. On the morning docket, the associate, I used to do this, but now the associate, they come back to the downtown building. They do the probable cause affidavit. That does not take 4 hours. Now, Judge Solis may be observing something different, but it doesn't take 4 hours. Once they finish that, they're done. The probable cause affidavits come only in the morning. They do not come in the afternoon. They're only all done in the morning. At the afternoon docket, again, it can take anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour, depending on how many you have on the chain. Once they finish that, they're done. They're finished. There's not a 4 hours in the afternoon. They're finished. They leave. The way a full-timer is used in conjunction with spirit is that there's a trial docket in between. but it's the trial to the court docket. You can't put the spirit judge on the jury trial docket because you don't know how long that'll last. And so it has to be a trial to the court docket. But again, you need the trial judge on that because you could also run into a time crunch. And you would have to be scrambling to find an associate on the spot. The reason why you don't pay them per hour, Ms. Hunt, is because the associates are practicing attorneys with active practices. Every one of them has some sort of active practice. They will not drive down to Lou Sterrett, call the docket, and interrupt their practice and give up days at the courthouse to get paid for 1 hour. It will not happen. We know that because of the past experience. So that's not going to happen. You've got to pay those folks in some sort of block, and you are paying for 4 hour blocks. Now, they are called in at the present time for 8 hours, but the maximum number of hours that they actually work is about 3 hours. If you have a full-timer doing that work, you can cover spirit, you can cover community courts, you cover the walk-in police and a number of other items that full-timers cover because they're there all the time. The city is losing money and has lost a substantial amount of money by using associates at the jail. We should have switched over to using a full-timer for that not long after I stopped doing it, but we did not for whatever reason. It is a good time to go back to doing that. We have a large roster of associates, Ms. Grayson, for the reason I just mentioned. They have full-time practices, and they work as they can, but many of them cannot come. So you go through a very large roster to find people to fill in. You need associates, but you need a large roster so that as you go down the roster, if one person says no, and they will, you may have to call 7 people before you hit somebody who can work a particular docket. But you've got to fill the trial docket, you've got to fill spirit, you've got to fill your community court, you've got to have somebody there for the warrant. You've got to do all that work, and so you need a large roster so that you can go down the roster. Mr. Gonzalez has been working on this for about a year. Is that what you said? A year. Well, if you will take 1 year and multiply it by 17, that's how long I worked on it. That's how long I lived in the system. And since I've been out of the system, I have kept up with the system. In addition to that, I'm at the courthouse on a regular basis, and I keep up with the lawyers who are working, the part-timers. Many of the part-timers who work for the city of Dallas are the lawyers who practice down at Frank Crowley, the criminal bar. When they're at Frank Crowley, they're going to move their cases, and they are not going to come up to the city of Dallas for an hour's worth of work, or even 2 hours worth of work. It is economically disadvantageous to them. That would mean that we would have to have an even larger roster of associates in order to make sure that it's covered. I admire Ms. Hunt's work. Mr. Gonzalez, I admire your work even more because you really are thrown into this without even being a lawyer. But I have lived in the system, and I happen to know what I'm talking about. As to the idea of these names being proposed because they're friends of the council members, that is absolutely, totally, utterly insulting. These people went through the process the same as the persons the ad hoc committee recommended to this council. These persons have law license. They have been practicing, and if one were to ask anyone, why did you select X as opposed to Judge Cheryl Williams? Why did you select X as opposed to Carrie Chavez? I suspect it would be difficult for any three people to come up with the same answer. And so I take serious umbrage at folks saying that these are my friends, these are good judges. They are people who know what they're doing, they have experience, and since we have brought on a number of new people who will not be able to work for a long time, at least we have some veterans there with the new people who can move the dockets. Mr. Mayor, for now, I'm going to stop because my voice is rising and I don't want that to happen. So I'm going to stop for now, but it doesn't mean I may not want to come back. Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We've had two good lengthy discussions here or monologues, and I want to try to keep this on the briefer side because we're not, I'll come back to you, because we're not going to be making any final decisions today. This is a this is an issue that we're going to just take a straw vote about. So I'm going to be asking everybody to keep it to a couple of minutes. Mr. Carraway.
I'll give it to
Ms. Hunt. Okay. Ms. Hunt.
I'll wait for my second round.
Okay. Yes. And I'll wait for you because Mr. Cadane has not spoken yet.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. And AC, thanks for all your work you're doing there. I know this is not an easy process. Here's my main concern with this is that we hadn't been briefed on this. And how do we know that this is going to save us money by adding two new courts? We're adding two new courts, correct? With these two judges? Okay, we've got 13 courts, right? 14 courts. We've got 11 judges. So we won't be sitting now 13 courts?
No, sir. The proposal is, and the assumption that I have assumed in making the statement that I believe it is not a cost is based on the following, is that it's not going to increase the number of courts, that it's just providing two additional full-time individuals that would be doing the same work with the same number of courts that we have currently.
They'd just be permanent.
We wouldn't have
to call them in to do the work.
You, in essence, would be replacing some of that work that is currently being done by associates to be done by these additional full-time.
But we're still going to have to have the associates.
Yes. There would still be a need for some associate work, but that work, which is currently being done by, by the current associate staff, is going to be reduced fairly substantially by the addition of two full-time individuals. But the assumption is there's no additional venues that are created, no more courts. It's the same work that we had previously.
So you don't feel like we need to be briefed on this. You feel like it's good. We're going to save money doing it this way. Is that right?
I'm just
we don't
for
even
your
know
direction
that.
As a council.
We don't know that, do we?
Let's clarify this point. Let's clarify this.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I think, Mr. Cadane, are we going to save money, or is this going to cost us more money, or is this going to be neutral?
It is my position that it's neutral.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, then let me ask this question, AC. Is this the proper way to elect judges? Shouldn't we go through a process to put these new judges in as permanent judges? That's one of my concerns.
For him to answer.
Okay. Can we discuss that?
We can't.
Okay.
I mean,
that's what I want to do, and that's what I want to get out. Where is the process in putting the two full-time judges on?
Great.
Instead of us just being able to say, well, we want them.
Okay.
And I think it's a fair deal because we've got judges out there that we didn't elect that should have an opportunity for those two seats. So that's where I'm coming from. Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Carraway, you don't want to speak yet. Ms. Margolin?
First, my question is, why are we not voting on this today? Why does this just fold into the
It's on the budget part today because part of your budget is approving what we call a PCA, a personnel classification action. You approve every position in the city so that if you want the option to have two more judges, I have to include it in your budget vote, just like the changes here that you had and how you're spending that money. So it could not, it doesn't always have to be money, it could be positions.
Okay. I believe that if we were to do this, that the process should be that it go through the traditional briefing process to a committee on the council, that it go to the council for approval, and then that it go through the nominating committee to determine who those who would fill those positions. I don't think this is the right way to go about this. I think that if it's a good idea, it should go through the proper process next year and be implemented next year. But I don't like doing it this way. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Margo. And Ms. Coop, Ms. Greg has already spoken. I'm going to get her in the second round.
I have a question to Judge Solis. Can I ask you a question? If this, Judge, if this is a neutral, revenue neutral, expense neutral proposition, does it make the court system more efficient by adding these two more judges? I mean, so right now I don't have anything to base it on because it's a neutral proposition. So efficiency would be the next step down for me when I evaluate, you know, some department or process that we're doing at the city.
It would make it more efficient in that there's more predictability. Some of the things like Judge Hill was talking about, when there's, for example, a loose-haired judge comes in and then it comes to the regular court, if there's a trial in one of the courts, a jury trial, for example, that judge could easily take that case and try the case. And so it makes it smoother and more predictability to how the process is going to
work. Do we have a backlog of cases that we can't handle every day?
Not every day, man, because it depends how many people want trials better. We can't predict that. It just happens every day. We go down there and see what happens.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Grayson.
AC. You state that this is revenue neutral. I want to go back to the fact that these full-time judges will get benefits.
Yes.
And the associate judges don't. So how is it that this is revenue neutral?
I know that what you heard from the judge would be a little bit different than what I'm saying, but I have asked a number of individuals about how much time your associate judges actually work when they're called out and are paid 4 hours. And contrary to what you heard from the judge, I have heard different, that in fact all that time is not used. Now, Ms. Hill went and said that she thought out of 8 hours they might be working only, please no.
An hour and a half.
Or three hours, I think.
45 minutes in the morning, 45 minutes in the afternoon. Yeah, you did. Thank you.
Three hours out of that eight. If you look, in my mind, if you looked at it just the other way, if you looked at they worked five and didn't work three out of that eight-hour period, the time that 3 hours for the 365 totals about the same amount of dollars as that assumption of the 28% premium for the two judges. So in my mind, just from a math standpoint, if there was that much slippage, 3 hours out of that eight, then it amounts to about the same amount of dollars that you would be having for the premium of that 20, and I'm assuming at the high point at 28%. 28% is going to be $56,000. The other would be about $52,000. So in very broad terms, I'm not sure if whether or not, you know, I don't have the data. I don't believe the data is available, but I know that from what I've been understanding that there is there's slippage in the way we're currently operating.
You know, it seems to me, AC, that you spent a year studying this court system, and you, in particular, looked at the judges and their efficiency, and you never came up with this recommendation.
And it seems to me that based on some of the other questions I've heard from my colleagues, that this bears more discussion. You aren't even necessarily agreeing, the two of you, on certain items. This is something that came suddenly, I think needs more discussion. I think it needs to follow the process that we usually have when something like this comes up, which is we take a look at it, we go through a process, and as Mr. Cadane said, you know, perhaps some of the other judges that weren't selected would like to be considered for this. That's also part of our process. And that, I think, would be a much fairer and even-handed way of handling this, is that we step back, we take a look at it, and if we believe this is a good idea, and maybe we'd say we should have fewer associate judges and three full-time judges or something like that, but we don't know that today. So I think this is something that needs a longer look and more studied discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hunt.
It's not clear to me why this proposal adds two full-time judges. What data or metrics are being used to decide just two judges? Why not four? Why not six full-time judges? And so when umbrage is taken at my statement that this appears to be highly politically motivated, I would refer everyone to the fact that we are talking about, out of the blue, hiring two full-time judges, not based on data, not based on metrics, not based on anything tangible that we can understand about efficiencies. It's not data-driven. It is politically driven. And I think we all see that. I think we all understand that. Let's call it like we see it. That's what this is. And if we're trying to get away from this idea that our courts are influenced by anything other than being fair and judicious, this is not the way to do it. It's not right to hand out full-time positions to well-connected attorneys. Write them into the budget. Create a position in the budget for these attorneys, who, I would remind everyone, have sued the city of Dallas. It is remarkable to me that we are discussing this. It is also equally remarkable to me that any conversation that this is anything other than about cronyism, that we're not looking at the fact that this was proposed 4 days ago. This wasn't proposed a year ago. This wasn't even proposed a month ago. This wasn't discussed or mentioned in the judicial committee. If this is such a good idea, if this is so smart, if this is a good use of taxpayer dollars, if this will make our courts run better, why is this just now being proposed? Why wasn't this part of the process when we chose our judges? We could have gone through and selected some additional judges, perhaps two judges, maybe one, maybe four, maybe five, maybe get rid of our part-time judges. Colleagues, it's clear what this is about. This is not the message we need to be sending to the public. If we want to have a discussion about who are the best judges, we can have that discussion. But carving out two new full-time judge positions in order to satisfy the desires of politically connected attorneys is wrong, and we shouldn't be considering it. Let's go back and make this a data-driven process. Let's examine this. We have a new administrative judge. He can help evaluate this. over the course of the next several months or a year or 2 years, we can evaluate how well we use our part-time judges. We can use them for the full 4 hours and get the benefit of that payment. Let's analyze what we need to do and not do this based on political motivations. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor. Let me say the wrong way to do it is to not do it correct. And I like my colleague, Ms. Hill. I kind of take it offensive when we say that it is political. When I hear my colleague speak to say that this is political, I would suggest, Ms. Hunt, just put some arrows on what you're talking about. You say we are friends of, they are friends of council members, and in your clarity and transparency to the public and to the taxpayers, put some arrows on who you're talking about. Now, let me say a couple other things here about this. When you're doing the right thing, if it's 2 minutes before you do it, or if it's 2 years before you do it, that's why in football, when you go up to the line, quarterback sees something, he calls an audible because he sees an opening. And if it's the right play, you're in it for what is best for the taxpayers, unless there's another hidden agenda somewhere that folks are not ready for that audible and you have to make some emergency adjustments so that you can continue to have your way. The word, well, one problem that I had with the process of this whole thing, since we want to put the cards on the table here, is that it was not full disclosure, even though there's a process that will allow this to take place. It's been explained to me, but it should have been made known to the public and to our taxpayers that when we voted, when this council voted, as much as we talk about people living in Dallas, that we actually, you all actually voted for a judge that does not live in the city of Dallas. Now, that has not been explained or put out there, even though there's a four-month clause where somebody can move. That should have been disclosed and should have been a part of the public discussion and public record that we voted, those that voted in favor, voted for a judge full-time that does not live in the city of Dallas. Now, that's out there today. But had we known that we were voting for someone who does not live nor pay taxes in the city of Dallas, and we're putting them before folks that do live in the city of Dallas, that have been paying their tax dollars here, that does buy their groceries and gas from here and pay their taxes to the city, it should have been made known to the public. But I'll make it known today that there's a judge that does not live, L-I-V-E, in the city of Dallas, that we, the city council, who encourage our police and employees and even the city council members, must live in the city of Dallas. Put that on your record. Now, with that being said, as it relates to being fair to the taxpayers, and because now the stories will come out that we're costing the taxpayers. I think the $500,000 with this redistricting map should be known. For those, Ms. Hunt, that are backing that, should be known that the taxpayers are strapped with $500,000 of a new reintroduced map that is yet to come forward. And whoever's behind that, let's have an equal story about who's paying and who's costing taxpayers in this city with frivolous political agendas. So now with that, I'm going to stop it, but I want to make sure that we understand that if we're going to play this game, we're going to play it fair, we're going to be transparent, and we're going to put it the way it is. We're all here protecting taxpayers, certainly,
But it's not. You can't have your cake and eat it too. Claim that we're charging and costing taxpayers the one end when you are doing the very same thing on the other end. So that's a fact. I'm talking to you. It's not. I put arrows on mine. Now, those that are in support of it, I'm talking to each and every one of the ones that are in support of that new map.
Well, I got to respond to that. Mr. Carraway, I think you're talking about that lawsuit. I don't have anything to do with that lawsuit. I've seen what map you're talking about. I don't like that map, and I don't support a different map from what has been proposed at the city.
Then I stand corrected with that.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway. All right, thank you for that good conversation. We want to take a straw. Okay. Mr. Allen.
We're ready for the straw vote and such, and a lot of energy and effort went into to getting us to this level that we are today. I will say you're exactly right. There was a judge that was put forth that did not live in the city, but this was well vetted by the council or by the committee. And that judge agreed that they would be moving to the city. So that I just want to make sure the citizens understood and understand that these are issues that are discussed and talked about and was discussed, and that judge is in that process or will be in the process of moving. So just wanted to make that clear. Also on this, as far as a rush that's involved in this, I think with a new administrative judge coming into place, that it would have been appropriate to allow this at least to have a little bit more of a transparency so that we could understand better the overall approach that's out there. I do like the fact that there has been a lot of discussion. We have made the comments that we want to make, and this was the comments that the committee over and over again talked about, was we wanted the municipal court, our municipal court, to be the very best in the United States of America. That was the underlying goal. And while we've made sausage through this, that at the end of the day, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, year from now, hopefully every quarter we will get better. That's the intent. Every quarter we will get better. It will take open communication between all three of the different groups, including City Hall. The committee talked about the communication process and how important that's going to be. And so I believe the strength will come from how strong our administrative judge can become, holding everyone accountable, because we will be visiting, as we talked we would be visiting with the administrative judge, to again make this the most efficient and best and respected municipal court system in the United States. That's the underlying goal. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. We will call for the straw vote. I just wanted to add my summary. I want to say thank you again to AC, to Ms. Hunt, Ms. Hasso, for this whole process. I think we're forgetting the progress we've made, and I agree with Mr. Allen that that's our objective, and let's do that. This is... it always seems to be about politics. It is. And this was the political body, and that's what we do. I've taken ownership of that, and I'm a big believer that we in America are too polarized, and we must find common ground as best we can. And so I don't think compromise is a bad word here. I've got some questions about all the details of this as well that we can take in a smaller way. I'd like to probably meet with our co-chairs on this thing and talk about this. The three of us haven't gotten together. I may do that. But with that, let me see a show of hands that would support the amendment that was read into the record earlier. Show of hands. 1, 2, 2, 4, 6, 8. We got 8. All right. Right now. So that's not the final vote. Okay. My real question is really the process of selecting these individuals, as Ms. Hill knows, and I want to come back with that, but the thought of adding two full-time and one associate seems to be a place. Mr. Cadain.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, was that, are you saying that you're okay with the judges that got put in there? Or do you feel like there needs to be a process? Because what you voted on was to vote those judges in.
I that is what I voted on. I understand that. Okay. I want to come back and understand how we vet that a little bit better. I'm not voting till final.
Okay.
Till next, but I think I wanted to kind of see where
this
everybody
comes up when?
This comes up a week from Wednesday.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. It's 1:46, 11:46 a.m. 11:46. Very good. Thank you. Meeting's adjourned.